Good morning. I am baby Stephen Hoover, I guess. Yeah, I grew up here in Altoona. I came to this church my whole life. I might look a little different. I switched glasses. I've been living in Knoxville, Tennessee now for a little over 11 years. So basically what I'm trying to say is the southern accent's pretty much going to stick around. I get that every time I come up. Man, you're sounding a little more southern. I'm like, I know. It's okay. I've just rolled into it. It's staying around. So I'm going to bring a little extra southern to the pulpit this morning. I hope you don't mind. But I kept thinking about what I wanted to share, what I wanted to be a part of this morning. I've been given this opportunity. I've been allowed to be here by John and given this opportunity by God. So what do I want to preach on? What do I want to share given my little time I have this morning? And I thought through the Old Testament, and there's some good stuff in the Old Testament that kind of gets missed, because, well, it's the old stuff, but it's so powerful. And then I went through the New Testament and thought there's a lot of really good, practical, powerful stuff we could go through there. But then I started to think, well, where does this all come together? Where does this all join? And it led me right back to one specific thing, and that's the gospel. Everything in the Old Testament is looking forward to the gospel. Everything in the New Testament reflects back on the gospel. And so you have this beautiful picture of a gospel that's not just four books in the midst of 66 books compiled together, written over a time span of 1,500 years or so, that's a couple millennia old. The gospel is cover to cover, Genesis to Revelation. And I'm going to prove that in case any of you have any doubts. That's what we're going to do today. We're going to look at the gospel. And we're going to start in Genesis. Because we're actually given the first picture of the gospel in Genesis 1:1. I'm sure almost everybody in this room could recite it. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was formless and void, and darkness covered the surface of the watery depths. And the Spirit of God hovered over the face of the waters. We actually see a picture of the Trinity in this passage. Two of them are pretty overt. One is a little more hidden. But look at the passage again. In the beginning, God created. That gives us a clue who it's talking about. God the Father, the creator, designer, sustainer. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. We see this formless cosmos, this formless universe. And then we see the Spirit of God is hovering over the face of the uncreated earth. It's, in science, you call it potential energy, right? It's just waiting there. It's like a bowling ball on the top of a cliff just waiting to be pushed off, right? That's potential energy. God is hovering, the Spirit of God is hovering over the face of the waters, just ready for what's coming next. And then what's the next verse? And God spoke and said, "Let there be light." So we kind of jump. We got two. We got God the Father. We got God the Spirit. But then it kind of jumps into creation. Like, well, where's Jesus in all of this? Well, look in John chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning was the Word. We got one person that knows it. In the beginning was the Word. Who's the Word? Jesus. John is referring specifically to Jesus when he says the Word. And look what he says about the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. What does God do to create? He speaks the Word. So in the beginning, God created. There we have the Father. The Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. We have the Spirit. And God spoke and said, "Let there be light." We have the Word. We have the Son. We have a perfect picture of the Trinity laid out before us at the time of creation itself. But look what else it says about the Word. All things were created through Him. And apart from Him, not one thing that was created had been created. In other words, without Jesus, there was no creation. Jesus wasn't a bystander. The Word was not some force that was just kind of there with God at the beginning. This was the agent of creation. God spoke, let there be light. The Word came out, and through Him, the light was created. This might seem like a little bit of a distraction, a little bit of a far cry from the gospel right now, but it's essential to understand this first before we can ever hit the truth of the gospel. You'll see why in a minute, but it's important to understand this. The gospel began before creation. That has some huge implications about it. The biggest of those implications is the gospel did not come as a consequence of the fall. The gospel didn't come because humans messed up and God went, oh man, now I have to make this plan. The gospel existed before creation itself. When the world was created, Jesus was there. And God, having perfect foreknowledge and perfect ideas, perfect plans of what was going to happen, He knew what Jesus was meant for. And it didn't surprise Him what happened next. The gospel existed before sin did. That's kind of hard to grasp because we're very temporal people. We live in a straight line, and that's all we get. But this all-powerful God outside of space and time, existing three in one, that we can't comprehend it. We can't understand that. We can't even understand what one being outside of time would be like, let alone a triune God. We'll never comprehend it. The Athanasian Creed, which is it's basically a really, really, really old statement in the first couple of centuries after the formation of the church, that tells us it cannot be grasped by human understanding but can only be understood by faith. When talking about the Trinity, it can only be understood by faith because these little peanut brains of ours just can't handle it. It can't handle what God is really like, but He's revealed Himself to us in this way, and He's done it before anything else. He showed us His character in creation. So it's important to understand, Jesus isn't this backup plan. It's not like Eden was plan A, and then when humans messed that up, okay, plan B is Israel. And now that humans messed that up, okay, plan C is now Jesus. Jesus was never plan C. He was plan the plan. There's not even a letter. It's not even plan A. It's just the plan all along. Before we go any further, we have to understand some bad news first, though, about the gospel. Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. There's somewhat of a debate going around about original sin, inherited sin from Adam. Basically, are you born sinful? Some people believe you are born sinful, some people don't. Here's what I say. If you have lived your life after birth without ever sinning, you can be exempt from this, and then we'll talk about original sin. But let's stick with Romans 3:23. We've all sinned. Because what is sin? Anything that separates us from God. Anything that pulls us apart from His will, from His plan, anything that separates us. In other words, God says, hey, do this, and we go, no, I'm going to do this. That's sin. That's why it's so important to understand the bad news. I'm going to tell you this story. I don't know if anybody in here has dealt with cancer, either personally or a family member. I'm sure we all have. But imagine for a minute, you're cancer-free, you're going in for a checkup, and you go into the doctor's office, routine checkup, and the doctor says, hey, you're cancer-free. Great. It's awesome. I mean, it's good news, right? That's really good news to hear. You're cancer-free, no matter what your life circumstances are. I have a friend, he's kind of my southern grandpa. His name's Dick Samsel. And he's battled cancer twice in his life. One when he was a little younger, and one now when he's starting to get aged. It's harder on his body. But the first time he beat cancer, and he lived years in remission. And then the news came back from the doctor. He had acute leukemia. it just devastated us. This was a man that just held our church together through some really, really hard times. And we all took it so hard. He actually went hours away for months to Nashville for treatment, where we got regular updates from him, but we were removed from him. He was far away and getting treatments, and then one day the doctor came in and he said, "You're cancer free." Can you imagine the weight of the good news then? Going in for a routine checkup here and you're cancer free. Well, that's fantastic. That's good news. But whenever you go into the doctor and cancer is eating your body away and the doctor says, "Guess what? You're cancer free." That is great news. When you fully understand the bad news, then you can really grasp the good news. And so we have to understand that sin is a cancer that is eating us from the inside out. And the good news is this: we can be cancer free. We can be disease free, but there's only one way to do it. There's only one way, and that is the work of Christ. Romans chapter 5, verses 6 to 11 says this: "For while we were still helpless, at the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For rarely will someone die for a just person. Though for a good person, perhaps someone might even dare to die. But God proves His own love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. How much more then, since we've now been declared righteous by His blood, will we be saved through Him from wrath? For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of His Son, then how much more, having been reconciled, will we be saved by His life?" In other words, that's kind of a confusing wording there. The original language just doesn't translate too smoothly into English. Basically, what he's saying is, if while we were enemies, we got this stuff, we got this reconciliation, we got this atonement from sin, if we were reconciled through the death, then how much more, having already been reconciled, will we be saved by His life? In other words, if you think that His death did wonderful works, imagine how much better the news is now that He's still alive. That's good news. This is great news. But one of the things that this might bring up, there's a movement among younger Christians, some younger Christians, not all. It's a debate whether a doctrine we call the sacrificial atonement is really correct. If you don't know what sacrificial atonement is, it's pretty much like it sounds. We are reconciled, pretty much what Romans 5 says. We're reconciled through Christ's sacrifice. Christ died, took all of our sin, and took all of the wrath of God in one moment, and we are given atonement. That's what sacrificial atonement is. The argument against it is this: I can't believe in a God that would take all of that wrath and put it on this innocent little baby in a manger. That seems like the actions of a cruel and unjust God. That's not the God that I know. Well, here's the problem. That stems from a misunderstanding of what we read about God in the beginning. This baby in a manger grew up. The baby in the manger taught and preached and healed and loved. And about 30 or so years into his life, he gave it up. He knew what was coming. He knew what was about to happen. He knew what his death would accomplish, and he laid down his life willingly. Willingly gave it up. Do you know, in the Iraq-Afghanistan wars, that period of wars, there have been exactly 3 people that have been awarded the Medal of Honor. The highest honor that you can give a soldier is the Congressional Medal of Honor. 3 people. It's been given to. One disobeyed direct orders, ran back into an active war zone to rescue more people out of his squad, and he got them all out of an active war zone. He got awarded the Medal of Honor for that. The next was awarded posthumously. That means after death, a man threw himself on a grenade to save at least two other Marines. He was awarded the Medal of Honor for laying down his life. The third is actually still living. A couple years ago, he was given the Medal of Honor because he too threw himself on a grenade to save just one of his friends. It left him horribly disfigured, even with reconstructive surgery. But for his bravery and sacrifice, he was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. Now, we look at those men and we wouldn't dare look at those and go, what a cruel person. What a cowardly person to do that. It wouldn't make any sense, right? To be like, well, what? That's the bravest thing I've ever heard of. They got the highest honor in the country. But this idea of saying, I don't believe in a God that could be okay with sacrificial atonement, with putting all the sin on this baby. That baby is God. That is Jesus. 100% God, 100% man. Another thing we can't comprehend. We tend to think, well, like 50-50, right? No, 100% God, 100% man. It even says fully God, fully man. This wasn't some split up, schismed brain. This was God putting on flesh to do what he needed to do, because the only one that can take the wrath of all the sin in the world, the only one that can take the wrath of God is God. So he came himself and said, I've got it. You can't do this yourself. You need me. All you have to do is believe. And if we look at this passage, there's a lot in here about us that's negative, right? What's this passage say about us? We're helpless, sinners, enemies. That's pretty strong wording. While we were still sinners, Christ came. While we were enemies of God, he came. While we were helpless, at the right time. That right time being while we were enemies, while we were sinners. That's the right time that Christ came for us. And he died. Not for the just, not for the good, but for the ungodly. So why did he have to die? If it's just all of the good people go to heaven, and that's all we have to do is live a relatively good life. Again, that's misunderstanding the bad news. The bad news is this: all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And it also says the punishment for sin is death. Nobody in the room wanted to say that one. It hits a little too close to home. The punishment for sin is death. Some translations use wages. Well, wages is what you get when you work. Wages is usually a good thing, right? The wages of sin is death. In other words, what you work for is what you get. The things that we do in life, the sin that we commit in life, ultimately lead to death. And this death isn't just referring to the death we all go through. This is referring to hell. This is referring to ultimate death, re-death. Revelation speaks of a second death. And there's another one that people talk about. I can't believe in a God that would send people to hell. Here's the problem. God isn't sending anyone to hell. We're headed there already. We are already on a destination because of our sin to go away from the presence of God, to be removed from the presence of God. And before you think, isn't that just so cruel? Isn't that so hard to achieve? Well, yeah, it is. How can you live up to perfection? If you had a blank canvas in front of you and you dropped one microscopic fleck of paint on it, is that canvas perfect anymore? No. If you have a canvas the size of the universe that is perfect in every way except for one blemish,
the size of an atom, is that canvas perfect anymore? No, one small piece, even the smallest bit of imperfection, cannot exist with perfection. The reason that we are headed for separation from God isn't because He wants to send us there, it's because our imperfection can't be in His perfection. It just can't. They cannot exist together. And that is why we need the gospel. Because no amount of good works, no amount of good deeds, no amount of money put in an offering plate, although on behalf of John, new year, new you, okay? Offering plate comes around, right? No amount of anything we can do will ever amount up to God's perfection. And God knew this. It was proven in the garden when Adam and Eve chose their own power over resting in God's. It was shown and proved through Israel, who even when they were given the law, knowing right and wrong from the garden, given right and wrong from God, they still could not do right. They still could not live up to the law. The New Testament, Paul tells us who, Paul, by the way, a scholar of the Old Testament, he would have known these laws really well. He says, that only leads to death. It only shows us where we can never add up. That's what the law does. But the saving grace of Christ is that His blood, His sacrificial atonement, covers us. It purifies us. In the song, Jesus Paid It All, it says, sin had left a crimson stain. He washed it white as snow. It's the only thing in the universe that can take that stain away. It's the only thing in the universe that can remove the guilt of sin. It's the only thing in the universe that can pull us away from a path of destruction and put us right with God. Right with God is a word you'll recognize, righteous. Righteousness is rightness with God. So now that we know, it's only by the blood of Christ that we can be saved. We have a really important question to answer for ourselves, personally. Now that I have it, what do I do with it? Now that I have this gift, now that I have this good news, what happens next? Well, let's look at the early church in the book of Acts. Acts chapter 8, Saul, which you might recognize him better as Paul. Saul agreed with putting Stephen, the first martyr, to death. On that day, the day that they killed Stephen, a severe persecution broke out against the church in Jerusalem, and all except the apostles were scattered throughout the land of Judea and Samaria. Persecution came, and they fled. The only ones left in Jerusalem were the apostles. Everyone else fled. And now in our minds we might think, okay, it's over. They're scattered. They're defeated. The military term, they've been routed. They're running away. But that persecution didn't do what they thought it was going to do. Because in Acts 8:4, just two verses down, so those who were scattered went on their way preaching the word. The persecution did not stop them from spreading the good news. The persecution didn't stop them from sharing the gospel. It encouraged it. And not only did it encourage it, it made it from a regional Jerusalem thing to an ends of the earth thing. The people were now going throughout all of the nations and spreading the gospel, spreading the good news. Those who were scattered preached. So what about us today? We have a response to this gospel too. If we don't, we're sitting with an unopened gift, the best gift in the universe, wrapped and still sitting under the tree, afraid to open it. When we go out and we spread the gospel, when we go out and we share the good news, that's when the gift gets open. Not when we know it, but when we spread the gospel. Look at the last thing Jesus says to his disciples in Matthew 28. He says, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe everything I have commanded you." So Jesus comes up to his disciples and he says, all of the authority in heaven and on earth, you might recognize that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He created the universe. Now Jesus is saying, all authority in the universe is now given to me. He says, go therefore, make disciples. In other words, all authority has been given to me, so you go and make disciples. Does anybody know any people that are good with English and writing in here? Good with English? Do you know what an imperative is when you're writing? The imperative is like, do this now. Do you know what the imperative is in that sentence? Go therefore and make disciples. It's not go. To make disciples. In fact, the original language, the word go, more accurately translates to as you are going, make disciples. Predicting the fact that just a few years later, they would be scattered from Jerusalem and they would be going to the nations. And Jesus has this promise, as you go, make disciples. They remembered his words as they were being persecuted and as they spread. And they said, as we got this word, as you go, make disciples. But Jesus had something else. And in a minute, we're gonna sing one last song. We're going to sing the doxology. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. I can't think of a better way to wrap up this service today. I can't think of a better way to wrap up the understanding of the gospel with that. But I want one more thing I want you to leave here knowing. Is the last thing that Jesus leaves his followers with. The last promise that they are given. He says, and remember. That word's important. We read the story of Noah. Noah's just floating on the water, and it said, and God remembered Noah, and the waters receded. The remembering is always accompanied by action. There's never remembering without an action involved. So Jesus is saying, remember, as you go, make disciples, and remember, I am with you always to the end of the age. As you go, as you make disciples, you are not alone. The power and the Spirit of God go with you. You never have to fear rejection. You never have to fear hate. We're promised hate from the world. Jesus says, the world hated me, they're going to hate you. But he says, you're not alone. I'm with you always to the end of the age. Nothing can take that from us. No power, no principality, no evil, no scheme of man can ever pull us from the loving hand of Jesus. So maybe you've come here today and your spirit is torn. Maybe you've come here today and it's been a really hard year and you just have the spirit of despair in you. And you just don't know where to turn. You don't know what to do. Maybe there's so much sin in your life. And you just say, there's too much. There's too much. I can't. I've done too much. I'm too bad. Listen, that sin that you think is too bad, it's already been paid for. It's already been taken care of. Jesus already paid for it. All you have to do is reach out and grab the gift. That's all. And this gospel isn't like a diving board that gets you into the deeper stuff of theology. The diving board is just the decision to jump in, and the gospel is the ocean. Everything leads to the gospel. Everything. And that gospel, that good news is this: you are never too far gone to come to Christ. You are never too bad for His goodness not to take effect. You are never too far away for Him not to reach you. If that's your heart this morning, and you really believe you're too far gone, let me tell you something, that is a lie directly from the pit of hell to keep you from Christ. Get rid of it. Maybe you've got a lot of anger pent up. Maybe you've got a lot of resentment or bitterness. And maybe you think, you know, I'm good enough. I pay my taxes, I give my tithe, I do good works, I'm good. I'm okay. That's one of the most dangerous places you can be in. Because none of us are good enough. None of us can match up to God's perfection. And the only way is through Christ. So if that's your spirit of, I don't need this, I don't need God. We all do. We all do. Or maybe, and this is the trap I fall into a lot more than I'd like to admit, maybe your spirit is just kind of done. Maybe you're just kind of apathetic. Well, I've done enough. I've been here for years. I've done so much. I'm done. I know that feeling. But the Spirit of God that lives within us is not a spirit of apathy. It's a living, moving, beautiful spirit that calls us to go and to make disciples. So if that's your spirit this morning, the spirit of apathy, like mine a lot of the time, I pray God just wrecks that from you today. I pray God just removes that so far from you that you would be imbued with a new passion to go out and to see this city on fire for Jesus, to see this as a stronghold. And this, we call this in Knoxville, we call this the Holy Huddle right now. But every week, underneath this, I have a shirt on that says, "To Knoxville and the Nations." Well, you're not called to Knoxville, you're called to Altoona. You're called to Altoona and to the nations. And we break our holy huddle every week to remind us that this is the recharge station. This is where we go to fuel up so we can go out and we can make disciples. So I want to challenge you to something today. And I'm not going to know if you do this. I'm not going to know the fruit of this labor, but the kingdom will, God will. This coming year, who are you going to disciple? This coming year, one person in your life, one person, who are you going to share the gospel with? Maybe it's going to seem like you're just tilling hard ground over and over and over again and planting seeds but not seeing any fruit. Well, guess what? A lot of times in my life, I've been called to plant seeds and never see the fruit. Maybe somebody else is supposed to do the harvest, but all of us are called to plant seeds. So who are you going to share the gospel with this year? I want you to take that challenge seriously. Let it take hold. Let it take root. Make this one New Year's resolution that you actually keep, reach one person. So as we wrap up, as we sing, I don't know if this is usual here. In the South, we call these steps the altar. There's nothing supernatural about them. It's just kind of a fancy title where people can come and pray and just relieve their hearts to God and lift up their burdens to Him. If that's on your heart, these steps are open. I know it's not usual. Down south it might be, but up here maybe not. But if there's something on your heart right now that you just need to lift up to God, just come and pray. Maybe you need to make a decision. Maybe this is the first or the hundredth or the thousandth time you've heard the gospel, but this is the time that it mattered. If that's the case, then we have a table and chairs, and that's a place for you to take your next steps. If that's your heart today, then I encourage you to do that as we sing. If your heart is on someone in particular, then I encourage you to pray for them right now. Don't wait. Pray. Prayer matters. Prayer makes a difference. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. But take this challenge to heart. However God is calling you to respond, would you respond now as we stand and we sing praise to the God from whom all blessings flow? Stand with me. Let's sing.